Hello, my friends, and welcome to Take a Deep Breath. My name is Mike Mayer. I'm a breathwork coach and a podcaster and a self-confessed breath geek. And today's going to be a bit of a solo rambly podcast where I get to share with you some bits that have been on my mind, some guests we've had recently, some things that are going on in the world and Take a Deep Breath, all related to breath work, don't worry, but some bits that we can really distill and have a bit of a conversation about. So I want to be talking today about heart rate variability, CO2, CO2 baths, CO2 therapies. We want to be talking about exercise and mouth tape, upcoming BBC radio interview, and sleep, which is pretty cool, coherence, communities, and habits. So lots of stuff to get stuck in, so let's get started. Okay, so let's get started with CO2 and CO2 therapy and CO2 stuff. So this right here, if anybody's watching this podcast, if you're listening to it, you can always jump over to YouTube. This is a CO2 device, a CO2 monitor. And this is showing us parts per million how much CO2 is in the atmosphere. So if you go outside with this, it's around 400 parts per million. And inside it typically is about double that, it's about 800, which is not such a big deal from what I'm gathering. But James Nestor, the author of Breath, has been carrying one of these puppies around with him now for over a year. And so I got very interested in all of this. Now, I'm in a fairly medium-sized room, and the door's been shut for not very long. And this is now sitting at 2,112 parts per million. And you might say, well, why is that an issue? Well, it's flashing red. And anything above 1,500 is considered red, parts per million. So just call it CO2 numbers. And Nesta told me there's a study, and they got children to perform the exam. And at one point it was, 800 parts per million, and the other was at 1,500. Those that went above the 1,500 parts scored 50% less. So what's going on here? So something is toxic about high levels of CO2, which kind of makes sense, right? We know a lot about CO2 in the atmosphere and all the rest of it. And it gets a little bit confusing because we're talking about like we should be breathing through the nose. We want our CO2 levels to be really good. How could CO2 be toxic? And I haven't been able to get a crystal clear answer from anybody. The best I got on this was from Anders Olsen. And he was saying, you know what, at night, got your bedroom door shut, your window shut, this can shoot up. Mine's jumped up to 3,000. I've got a baby in the room, got my partner in the room. We've been at 3,000 parts per million. So we are essentially starting to suffocate ourselves. We've got a high level of CO2, a toxic level of CO2 in the room, which is going to impact sleep. And when CO2 gets higher, we tend to hyperventilate more, which makes sense because we feel this breathlessness. So even though CO2 in the room could be really, really high, CO2 in your body could be actually quite low because we're which is just, it just boggles my mind. And when we blow out too much CO2, I won't give you the whole science lesson today on this podcast, but when we do that, what's going on? We get this thing called vasoconstriction. So the 100,000 kilometers of smooth muscles in our bodies get tighter. Slight fun detour. I'm going to film a video about this. I bought a blood pressure monitor. And I'm measuring my blood pressure, I think it's like 118 over whatever. 118 is the number I was paying attention to top numbers. 118, I was like, okay, it's not too bad. 120 is good, 130 is pretty good. I did the Wim Hof breathing for 30 breaths, and it went up to 178. And it started flashing, it was really hard to get the reading. I was like, wow, I only hyperventilated there for a couple of minutes. Not even a couple of minutes, probably a minute. And I was at a point that if a doctor saw that, he'd want to put me on medication. Because we talk about, you know, don't do these techniques if you've got high blood pressure. And so it's really interesting just to see firsthand this blood pressure monitor just go berserk. So one of the problems with hyperventilation, bringing it back to this, is when we breathe too fast, when we breathe through the mouth, when we breathe too shallow, we blow off too much CO2, we cause this vasoconstriction, we cause blood pressure to increase. But there's other things going on here. Clearly, there's a cognitive function that we haven't quite crystallized yet, but something's going on with this like toxic poison of CO2. So what can we do about it? Very, very simply, open a freaking window. I'm recording right now. I've got a crazy dog downstairs. You might be able to consider barking. So I am suffering for all of you beautiful people at 1541 at the moment. We did this yesterday. My good friend Tom Granger was round, and we opened the window and it went right back down to 800 really, really fast. So I would consider sleeping with the window open, and a jar in the door. I would also consider having good ventilation in the car, and I would consider getting as much fresh air as possible. We're not meant to be indoors, right? So that's been a really interesting one. It's a little anxiety box I carry around. They go, oh my God, look at how high this CO2 is. Now, to flip it on its head, let's talk about some other CO2 benefits I've learned recently from Anders Olsen. CO2 baths. Okay, what the frick is going on here? So I did a Airheads masterclass last year, and Anders came and gave us a talk, and he showed some pictures of people with diabetes, with problems going on with their feet, and they would soak their feet in CO2 baths, and fizzy water, basically carbonated water. And you can make a version which I think is more potent, which is a mix of ascorbic acid, which is vitamin C, or artificial vitamin C, and I think bicarbonate soda. So I'm going to make some videos and play with this a little bit. But if you go and look at the podcast with Anders before and after, the one I did like 3 years ago, one I've just done now, this freaking guy looks about 10 years younger. His skin looks perfect. And what he was telling me was he is putting his face in a bowl of fizzy water or carbonated water every day and breathing through a straw for about 6 minutes. And my understanding of what's going on with the science here is pretty cool. So when we're exposing our tissues to higher levels of CO2, through whatever chemical mechanism in the body, the body's going, oh, there's CO2 here, we need oxygen, which tends to be the kind of response to a high level of CO2. So this is, and again, if I just pause for a second, when the CO2 is low in our body, well, the body's like, well, we don't need any more oxygen, which is one of the reasons we're depriving ourselves of oxygen to the tissue, because the oxygen's released from the hemoglobin in the presence of normal levels of CO2. And so if we reduce the levels of CO2, the affinity or bond to the oxygen molecule to the hemoglobin is tighter, stronger, bonded. So we need more levels of CO2. So when we put our face in these CO2 baths, the presence of a higher level of CO2 in the tissue is triggering something in the mechanism of the body to go, oh, we need to release some more oxygen, some more nutrition to this area. And through whatever process, it's making the skin look freaking good. Going back to what Anders showed me, these people with like gangrene and problems with their feet, they're soaking them in these baths. Now, Anders has taken this to a whole other level. If you've seen any of his stuff, this guy, Anders Olsen, Conscious Breathing, was in the book with James Nestor. He has a big CO2 suit, like a big balloon he puts himself in. He's just flooding his whole body with CO2. So CO2 was being used years ago to treat people with breast cancer. I'm not talking like 20, I'm talking like over 100 years ago. He's released a load of old books. It was also used to help people calm down, like a higher level of CO2. We think about oxygen now as the oxygen mask, but there was more of a mix of CO2 in the past. Fascinating freaking stuff, this. So this gets confusing because we're talking about, well, hang on, there's a higher level of CO2 in your bedroom. That's bad, right? So we're talking about something localized on the tissue for a short period of time versus being in a toxic bedroom environment of 3,000 parts per million for 8 hours. So there's that going on there. And this is the tissue not necessarily breathing in. But let me confuse you and take you to a whole other level of this as well. So Anders has also invented something called the Carbo Inhaler. And it's a mix of a soda stream and like a gas mask. And he's going to send me one, and we're going to film the whole thing. And he's been using it for a while. And this gets up to, I think, 8,000 parts per million. But it's acute. So you're breathing it in for a short period of time. And what he's saying happens is when you take in these higher levels of CO2 for a short period of time, and you focus on some deep breathing exercises, you are helping readjust your sensitivity to carbon dioxide, which is the whole thing Potato's doing, Oxygen Advantage is doing, Coherence Breathing's doing. It's bringing us down a bit like intermittent fasting. Can't do it forever, right? But we can bring ourselves down to 10 breaths per minute, 5 breaths per minute. From what we would normally be at, 12, 15, 20, 25 breaths a minute. We go down, we bring ourselves down, we tell our body and our brain it's okay that we can handle this slightly higher level of CO2. We might feel uncomfortable at the start, but through the process of doing this for a long enough time period, we get used to it. And in James Nestor's book, Breath, he is talking to Justine Feinstein, and he takes a 30% CO2 suck, and it was like a panic attack, I think was the words he used. You know, this, it almost, you know, felt very, very suffocated. So I'm not sure what the parts per million were in that, but it was around the 30% CO2 level. And what Feinstein's doing, from my understanding, is he's helping people shortcut all of the oxygen advantage, all of these other things where you know you do slow breathing for days and weeks and months and you tape your mouth up and all this sort of stuff, and we can get you there really, really quick. So it's very interesting. I think the CO2 therapy stuff's gonna take off a lot more because everyone's looking to save time, and if there's a pill or something we can take to change things. So anyway, bringing this back to Anders and the CO2 carbo inhaler, he has this way. You can buy them now. You can go on his website and buy them on the Conscious Breathing website. But you can essentially take these acute blasts of CO2 in a very safe way and start to adjust. And he's saying that his press-up game's increased, and calmness, and his ability to hold his breath for longer. So watch this space on that. But again, if it comes back to, well, what can I do at home watching this right now? I think it's dead simple. I think it's just go back to slow breathing. You know, my favorite breathing exercises from the kind of Buteyko Oxygen Advantage world are finger in front of the nose, picturing it's a feather, seeing if you can soften the breath, bring the breath down, bring the rate down, make the feather as soft and as light as possible. Start to feel that uncomfortableness where you'd like to breathe a little deeper, a little faster, choosing not to, knowing that at that point, we're starting to play with our CO2 sensitivity, bringing complete relaxation to the face and body at the same time, and going through that process. I've got videos I can link to that will guide you through that for 10, 15 minutes. And that's doing it in a healthy way, in a slow way. But I'll keep you posted on the CO2 stuff because it's pretty cool. But I think that the CO2 face baths, I think, you know, I've had a lot of interest. A lot of you have reached out. So how do I do that? What's the recipe? I'm just going to go with fizzy water for now. I'm not going to be messing about with chemicals and stuff. I'm just going to get the fizzy water. I'm going to start putting my face in it, and we'll see. And I want you, do I look younger afterwards? Let's see. Are my blemishes a little bit better? We shall find out. Okay. So CO2, tick, tick, tick. Let's talk a little bit about coherence now. So this is a big one. If I can get my camera to focus, I feel like I'm a little out of shape there, a little out of focus. What's been going on with coherence? So let's define coherence first of all. So it typically is around 5 to 6 breaths per minute. People normally say 5.5 breaths per minute. 5.5 seconds in, 5.5 seconds out. It's a conscious breath. There's no pauses on the inhale or exhale, so it's not a box breath. It's an in and an out. It's generally done through the nose. It's generally done soft and gentle as we switch it around. I'm lucky that I'm friends with one of the world's top experts, Tom Granger from Aria Breath. I've got to interview Dr. Brown as well and a few others, but Tom's been around everywhere and interviewed all these people. It's known in the breath book as the perfect breath. It's so freaking simple. I use it with all my clients. It has profound effects. It's good for stress resilience, lowering blood pressure, helping with sleep, helping with focus, concentration, improving CO2 tolerance, and the big sexy one right now, heart rate variability. So this brings me on to Dr. Andrew Huberman. So for those of you that don't know, because I haven't spoke about this much, is I was featured, one of my coherence breathings were featured on Huberman on the 25th of December, Christmas Day, where the legendary Rick Rubin, who is a producer for Gaga, Eminem, Beastie Boys, Johnny Cash, my favourite band Metallica, and a few others, came on the show and goes, look, before we start, I want to take you through a breathing exercise. I've got relatively low heart rate variability, says, and I've used this and I've got high heart rate variability now. Huberman's like, okay. And they went through the process and he plays Take a Deep Breath and he plays my track and he can hear my voice. I'm like, oh my God, I finally got on Huberman. So that's pretty cool. And since then, it seems to have gone a little bit crazy. So I was then featured on Google News, and one of my tracks just had like 50,000 views in a couple of weeks, which was really, really cool. And it's just grown from there. So it's not a new breathing technique. It's a very old technique. It's shown up, I think Nesta talks about it, shown up in the Lord's Prayer, in some Islamic traditions, in some Buddhist traditions. It seems to be, you know, this low rate, this 5 to 6 breaths per minute. And it's given our heart the ability to get younger. I just interviewed Dr. Alan Watkins, who's probably a HRV expert. I say probably is a HRV expert. And he works with CEOs, really, of corporations. And he says, I can tell you when you're going to die. It's a predictor of all-cause mortality. It's something that I can tell what kind of leader you're going to be. I can tell what emotional state you're in. I can tell what you're doing before bed. So, and he says there's about 27 different ways you can measure heart rate variability. And most of these manufacturers of these devices are not doing it properly, which was quite scary to hear, actually. He goes, most of them don't know how to read it. And the ones that even do know how to read it, all the calculations background are so wrong. It's like, how often are you measuring that heart rate variability? Because, you know, it should be between every gap. So if you're only doing it like once a minute or every half minute, you're then having to use algorithms and calculations to kind of guess what it is. And you're missing the richness of the data. So my ultimate next question is, well, what device should we get? And he said, I think he said the best ones are heart strap, chest straps. So if you really want to get geeky with this, is a chest strap. I've been reluctant to get any kind of device. I heard Huberman talk about this a while ago. And the thing that I think puts me off the most is you get this kind of readiness score the next day, which is the heart rate variability calculation score. And if it says you've had a bad night's sleep, I've got a 1 year old, then it's like, oh, don't work out today. And it kind of just puts me off a little bit. That being said, I think I'm about ready to commit to something because I want to start measuring some calculations, respiratory rates and all these different things. So we'll watch this space. And I also have this other feeling, maybe some of you share this, which is like, it's okay if it's not medical grade accuracy, because even if it just gives me a score which is not necessarily accurate, but it's consistently inaccurate based on what I can see here, and I can see that my heart rate variability is low, and then I do some breathing exercises and it becomes high, I've got clients that show me their screens, then I feel like that's kind of good enough. Like this search for perfection, of course it would be nice to have medical grade pulse oximeter measuring your blood pressure, but actually if it's off by 10-15% but you're still your numbers, I kind of feel like that's okay. And we should be okay to use those, and we can remove some of the judgment about it and remove ourselves from perfection. And just having some sort of metric is useful, but also not getting caught up in it is the other thing as well. So just to bring this whole heart rate variability ramble home, coherence breathing seems to be one of the best ways to do this, to improve your heart rate variability. 20 minutes a day seems to be the minimum effective dose. Doing it lying down, you can multitask with coherence. You can do dishes and go for a walk and go on the subway and all these things. But from what Tom was telling me, the best way to do this tends to be just giving yourself permission just to do this, focus on this. There's many other ways you can bring coherence breathing into your life. But if you're not doing this already, I'd be bringing this simple breathing technique in because it's just incredibly powerful. So we want those gaps between the beats to be varied. They noticed that when people wouldn't leave the hospital, they would have a more metronomic heartbeat. Every beat was the same. Those that left the hospital, this is just what I've been told by a couple of HRV people, they noticed that they would recover quicker because the heart has the ability to listen to what the body needs. It's a good listener and it adapts beat by beat. Blood pressure, temperature levels, moisture, oxygen, the heart should be changing constantly to keep us in a homeostasis kind of even place. So best way that it seems to do that right now, the free ray, is just get yourself on some coherence breathing. So, and then check out the Rick Rubin Huberman podcast because they go into loads of other stuff. I'll put that in the show notes down below. So let's move on to the BBC. So I was very lucky that I got to get interviewed by a local BBC radio station a couple of weeks ago. Very, very cool. Got to talk about just the benefits of breath work overall. Stuff you already know, you're watching this. But, you know, improve sleep quality, improve mood, improve digestion, improve posture, improve longevity, improve heart rate variability, improve blood pressure, improve concentration, improve focus, improve happiness, lower stress levels, help with depression. Again, if we could make this into a pill and market it, you and I, we would be billionaires, right? But the good thing is they can't do that. And so it's breath work. And, you know, we can all get access to these ancient practices. So I'm going on to BBC Radio London this Saturday, which whatever date that is, 27th of January. And they've asked me to come on there and talk about sleep. And so I thought, you know what, why not have a little conversation with you? We can practice some of these sleep things together and I get the kinks out before we go any further. I should call this tea with Mike. So I've got a nice little chamomile and honey tea here. So breath and sleep. So I've given them some talking points, which I'll just pull up now, actually. I feel like breath work is having its day at the moment. Everybody's freaking talking about it. I mean, I know I'm in an echo chamber and maybe you are too. You're watching a breath podcast, but things are in a very special place right now. Very, very interesting to see what's going on here. I've been approached by a few corporations to talk about breathing as well. I'm getting a lot more people asking for client coaching. And we've got some other cool things coming up. So let me know in the comments if you're feeling like breathwork just seems to be getting a bit more popular than it did last year. So here are the talking points I'll be talking through the BBC. Again, let me know your thoughts down below if it's a bit rubbish and we need to change it. So how to wind down and fall asleep. So let's just cover this off then. So before we do, let me share. I've had sleep problems most of my life. I remember being at primary school, which in the UK, I think is up to the age of 10. And I remember being really young, I don't know, probably seven. And I remember talking to the teacher, going, I really struggle to sleep. So this isn't a new thing that I've had. I've always been a delicate sleeper. I remember going to my parents when I was like 11 or 12, going, Mom, Dad, I can't sleep. And they're fast asleep in the bed. I was like, Mom, I can't sleep. So I don't know. I don't think it's genetic. I just think maybe it's a stressful thing. I'm not going to bore you all day about this, but I've spoken about feeling stressed and anxious most of my life. So it's all linked. And so one of the benefits of getting to breath work for me, it wasn't just the stress, it's like my sleep got better. And I've got all the gadgets and gizmos, you know, I like to wear the light blocking glasses and nasal strips sometimes and mouth tape sometimes and magnesium and chamomile tea and all these beautiful, wonderful things. But the breath really is the foundation. And again, quoting the Lord and Saviour, James Nestor, he talks about, I think it's called vasosuppression, I think he calls it. There's a way that when we get into deep sleep, we suppress the liver, the kidneys, from excreting too much liquid. So we don't need to pee as much, we get into deeper sleep as well. Anders also talks about when we overbreathe during sleep, which could be happening in a high CO2 environment, we could be constricting the liver and kidneys as well. So there's less space, more liquid in this. There's, again, a few things going on with sleeping and tinkling in the night. So we want to make sure we're nasal breathing. So let's bring this back then. So how to wind down and fall asleep. So what most people don't realize is like your sleep process begins, first of all, it begins in the morning. So as Andrew Huberman would say, get out as soon as you can first thing, get daylight in the eyes. That daylight in the eyes is not only waking you up, it's sending a pulse. So around 12 hours later, melatonin starts to increase, which is like a sleep hormone, helps start to wind down. If we're in an artificial room all day, we don't necessarily get that pulse as strong. So it starts as soon as you wake up, your sleep process. But when it comes to breathing, you know, most of us are rushing around, loading the dishwasher before bed, quickly cleaning up, maybe watching some sort of scary film, and all these things, we start to breathe more and more, and we want to start to slow the breath down. So we really want to be thinking about half an hour before bed, not only like turning the lights down, putting on the light blocker glasses, actually slowing the breath down more. Don't do anything that's too physically strenuous before bed. You know, I've heard for years, don't exercise a couple of hours before bed. So we want to start the breathing process of slowing the breath down to help the mind slow down, to help the body relax as soon as we can, really, at nighttime. And then what I like to do is I like to get into bed and I like to do a coherence breathing track. So I got into the whole reels and scrolling thing for ages, bloody hell. And it's just like so exciting. It's a mad way to go to sleep, right? Just watching loads of reels. So I put in the coherence track and I just follow along with the breath and bring my breath rate down, start to relax. Very rarely do I get 20 minutes of coherence breathing done at night because I'm kind of falling asleep. So the keys here are, we slow the breath down before we go to bed. We focus on the breathing track. Now, 4-7-8, what is the magical reason 4-7-8 works? I don't think anyone really knows the answer. Could it be 8-9-16? Probably. But what I think is going on there is you are counting. I saw a podcast that I don't necessarily believe this is true, but I heard that when you're counting, you can't worry at the same time. I've tried it. You can count and worry at the same time. But I find that when you are counting, you are keeping the mind fairly busy. So in for four, hold for seven, out for eight. So you're breathing in slowly. You're holding, which is a wonderful way to pause and slow the breath down. And then you're exhaling and you're extending the exhale, which is a safe signal. I'm signaling a safe exhale. Longer exhale lets my brain know that I'm okay. Fast exhale lets it know there's a problem. Fast inhale lets it know there's a problem. So 4-7-8, 8-9-16, 4-12-42, fill in the blank, but just something where you may be counting. So if you've got a really busy mind, again, lights come down, glasses go on, make your phone screen red. There's a little app you can get on your iPhone. I think it's the same on the Android as well. If anyone that's watching this, there's a little shortcut here. I click night mode, everything goes super red on there. So you can still have a little bit of fun with your phone at night, and then during the day you just make it blue again. So turn the lights down, thinking about your bedtime routine, getting the light in the morning, and then slowing the breath down. So number one, how to wind down and fall asleep. There you go. How to get back to sleep if you wake up. Okay, so this is a big one. So first of all, if you're waking up for a tinkle and you haven't done this already, consider the mouth tape. If you're scared about having tape on your mouth, then get the one that goes around your mouth, the Myo tape. On top of that, put on a nasal strip. It gives you a lot more space. Open up the nose with the nasal strip. You're not going to feel as suffocated. And it's just going to encourage healthy nasal breathing. And in doing that healthy nasal breathing, what's going on here? We are taking in more breaths through the nose. The nose is cooling the air. It's humidifying the air. It's making each breath more efficient. It's sterilizing the air. It's slowing the body down, slowing the breath down. It's helping us stay into a deeper level of sleep. Which is all very useful. And yet if we're still waking up, it could be this, you know, going to the doctor about bladder problems, but if we're waking up, for example, my son wakes me up, and then the mind gets busy, same process, you know, slow nasal breathing, focus on something, focus on the 4-7-8 or a different breathing technique, pop in that breathing technique, focus on it for a little bit, take your time, relax, know that you are going to sleep again at some point, you're completely safe. If you feel frustrated, you can do a little stretch and you just focus, and that gets me back to sleep again. Snoring. So a couple of things with snoring here. So consider your bed position. Most back sleepers tend to do a little bit of snoring. The tongue comes down the back of the throat. So side sleeping tends to be better. Mouth tape helps, being a nasal breather. Nasal strip, again, helps. And also consider using a neti potty or some way to wash the sinuses out. I use a saline solution when I'm particularly stuffed up, and I just give the nose a good wash there as well. So there's a couple of things you can do there. Never use tap water, but the idea of sterilizing the air, sterilizing the nose is very useful. I say sterilizing, I mean washing out there. Apologies, got my little baby crying next door. Waking up and feeling fresh as daisy, I think it's the bits we've already covered, you know, nasal tape, mouth tape, keeping yourself relaxed, not drinking too much water before bed's another way of doing it. And then how to energize in the morning. So there's loads of little energizing breathing exercises. You can do loads. I don't think it needs to be full on hyperventilation, but you can be taking in some sharp breaths. So inhale, arms come up, exhale, pump it out. I find 3 sets of 30 of those through the nose. Really powerful, real good way to get some fire, some energy, some focus, a little shake in the morning, daylight again, glass of water with a little sprinkle of Celtic sea salt in. And I'm hearing this over and over again, don't take your caffeine for at least 2 hours before you wake up because it doesn't work, which again feels weird because I feel like I do get a perk from caffeine straight away. But from what Huberman and Chris William are saying, you just can't get that. The receptors in the brain aren't there to take the caffeine for 2 hours. So take that how you will. Sometimes I'll still have a coffee first thing, but I try and delay the caffeine. Big glass of nice sprinkled salt water and go from there. So I'll let you know how the BBC interview goes. That was a good ramble on it. I need to make that much shorter as well. But in short, just know that how you breathe affects how you sleep affects how you feel. If you've had a bad night's sleep, it's really hard to exercise and eat properly. And so if we fix our foundation, which is our breath, we can then fix our sleep. And then by fixing our sleep, we can, you know, do the other good things, eat whole foods, all the rest of it. Book recommendation for you. I've just finished Ultra Processed People. It's probably the most important book I've read in the last 10 years. And I'm putting all the breath stuff in there as well. I've really struggled with like knowing about food and junk food. And is vegan the way to go? Or maybe it's carnivore. Or maybe it's like a whole foods diet. And blah, 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 blah. All these different things. So I always look at the back of the packet and you see all these preservatives and things, right? I mean, are they good for me? Are they not good for me? They're probably good for me. The way this book, Ultra Processed People, breaks this down is incredible. And I'm just going to give you an example. I was in Waitrose yesterday. It's a very posh supermarket in England. I was just at the motorway services. Okay. Oh, they've got a meal deal on. Fantastic. Little tray of chips, which is just raw potato, fries, raw potato with a little bit of fat on, in a tray, goes in the oven. Amazing. I thought, I'll just check the back of the packet and see what's in there. Dextrose, which is like a sugar. substitute, a protein that makes the chips yellow, and some preservatives as well. I was like, mate, this is chips. This is a potato that's chopped up, which I can make at home and just sprinkle a bit of olive oil on. And you've put these ultra processed things in. And spoiler alert for the book, these things that are in the food, which haven't necessarily been tested properly, are like destroying your gut biome, that they're helping us put weight on, they're confusing the system, they might be causing cancers, they're definitely causing things to do with diabetes. When we swap out sugar for sweeteners, the body still thinks it's sugar, does all the same things it's doing anyway. Sugar consumption's actually come way down over the last 20 years, yet we're still getting fatter and more obese. It's a whole minefield. I don't want to start going down the nutrition route, but what I will say is, if you get a chance to read that book or watch a podcast with the author, I forget his name off the top of my head now, but it's probably one of the most powerful books I've read. So ultra processed people. Okay. Okay, I want to talk about community. This is a big one. This has been a bit of a head scratcher. So I did a podcast a little while ago and say 2024 is going to be the year of community. And I don't really know what that means. So if I just share a bit about my experience, the best times of my life have always been with other people. It's never been alone with an Xbox and a pizza. It's always been doing something. And if I just bring this back to my breath journey, the Wim Hof retreat in 2016, of course, Wim was amazing and I had a great time. But it was the 60 people in the room. It was the crying with these people, hugging them, making friends. My best friend in the freaking world, I speak to every bloody day, Scott, came from Wim Hof, you know, community. I did the Camino de Santiago. I walked across Spain. I met hundreds, if not thousands of people. And I made friends with these people. Community. I was walking with these people every single day. Why are you walking the Camino? Oh, I've got this going on. Oh, what about you? Oh, this person's passed away. I've got this thing going on. So you have this connection with this this community. I got back from the States a couple of months ago while I was learning Vivation, which is a conscious connected breathing technique to help integrate trauma and stress and it can make you more, you know, improve your spiritual practice and help with addiction, all these different things. Spoiler alert, if you want to learn more about Vivation, you know, drop me there's a link below. I'm taking on a few clients there, just finished with one today actually. But with Vivation, as good as it was and as much as it's helped me with my son at 3 a.m. and a load of other things, and I'm working with beautiful clients and we're having these transformations, I've got people that are getting off substances and people that are able to cry for the first time in 20 years and all this sort of stuff, the community was amazing. So hello, if anyone's watching, beautiful group of people, 10 people in a room for 10 days, for 12 hour days, you're gonna make friends. What else? Corfu freediving, again, did a retreat, amazing people. Yoga Barn in Bali, amazing people. And then moving online, because we live in a digital world now, there's no way of getting around this. Me and my good friend Tom have mentioned before, we did a couple of Airheads things last year. We had the Airheads Masterclass, we did Airheads Advanced, and we did a couple of Airheads days. And what it is, basically, we join forces, we're two breath dudes, we've got our own practices, we join forces, we become the Airheads. You can go and buy the masterclass now, it's got all the world's top speakers on when it comes to breathwork, teaching you how to breathe. So if you're a breathwork instructor, it's freaking awesome in particular. Anyway, we come together, we do these epic events, and the people are incredible. So we've got WhatsApp groups that have been left over from these things. They're really active, everyone's chatting, you know, someone's having a baby, oh my God, this is really great. I've got a load of really awful WhatsApp groups on my thing, blah. But I've got these ones here, they're amazing, these people, the community. Whenever I've done a live event over Zoom, the event finishes and everyone's just hanging around at the end. I was like, I'm done now, and everyone's like, yeah, we're just chilling, we just have a chat, just have a chinwag. So where am I going with this? I want this year to be the year of community, and it's not about me. There are so many of us out there that are doing these weird breathing techniques. We're feeling amazing. We're trying to tell our parents or our friends or our kids, and they think we're really weird, and it makes us feel a little bit isolated. I'm having this conversation on a regular basis with different people, and I want to create, at first, a digital place for us to come together. So it's going to be some sort of community place. I would think it's going to be something like jumping on Zoom at least once a week, recording those events, going through different breathing techniques. You know, I'm coaching clients. My price has just gone up again. That's $5,800 for 6 weeks of coaching. And I'm pretty much booked out constantly with that. And the transformations are incredible. And that price didn't start like that overnight. I've been working with people and selling out, and the price has been going up and up and up. And the transformations are incredible. And on the other end of the scale, I've got the YouTube channel, which is completely free. So people that can't afford, and I appreciate that's a privileged position to be in for some people. And I only work with a few clients, so it takes up a lot of time. On the other end, you've got all the free stuff on YouTube, but it's unstructured. So there's 400 videos, I think, on there now. There's 100 podcasts. You know, there's hundreds of breathing techniques. There's clips. And I think for some people, it's like, where the freaking hell do I start? So there's this unstructured thing going on in one place. There's the cost aspect, I think, for a lot of people that can't afford to pay $5,000-$6,000 for one-to-one breath coaching. And then there's something else, which is like, I feel lonely. I feel alone. I'm talking right now to a lens. I know I'm not. I'm talking to you, but I'm still talking to this lens right now. But at the same time, you're watching me passively. And whenever we get together, it's always better. And so this idea of being on Zoom, just I heard about this other community the other day where they just put the camera on, they have a coffee in the morning, and they just have a chat with the community, and we just have a chat about what's going on, what you're struggling with, what's going well, some sort of leaderboards or gamification of things that are going on, some ways to measure the breath, ways for us to get closer and connect. And so, you know, I've been doing this for 7 years now. I've got a lot of knowledge. I've got a lot of information. I've got a lot of thoughts on this stuff. Hence, I'm doing these kind of rambling more podcasts. And so, and I also know that you're a cool bunch and you should meet each other. And I know that when you do meet, like, for example, I've done these WhatsApp groups, these Airheads things. When you guys get together, you make other cool friends. And it's exactly the same in other communities. So I know of Dr. Chris Ryan, and he does these meetups, and he's all really fucking cool people. And when you get together, it's just that tribe. And the same with us, yeah. Very rarely does somebody leave a nasty comment on a breathwork YouTube video. It happens, of course it happens, but it happens very, very rarely. You go and look at like a Joe Rogan video or something, it's a bit different. Because that's, I don't know, why the community, who knows. But I like to feel we're a pretty cool gang. And we've got something in common, which is we love to feel better. We're trying to improve energy. We're trying to improve focus. So I would just love to know from you, what do you want? Because I'm building something. I'm just not sure what. But it's going to be a place where we can get to know each other. It's going to be a place where it's not about me, but I will be part of it. It's going to be something that's living and breathing, where we can get answers to our questions. If we're struggling with something and we need answers, because a lot of people come to me, it's like, I just need to know what to do here. And so the way that we can share that advice, a lot of you watching this have got incredible advice as well. You've gone through your own practices. So let me know in the comments what you would like. Would you be willing to pay to join a community if it was really vibrant and sexy and cool and geeky and we had guests coming in and I was teaching each week and we're talking and we're hangouts and there's a library of content you can go and play with as well, and there's prize draws and I don't know. It's just a bit of a befuddle, but something's going to happen, because this has to change. It can't just be me talking to you. It has to be us in a group environment. So let me know what your thoughts are on the community. I'm very excited by this, by the way. This is the most enthusiastic. I'm considering slowing the coaching right down. I'm even considering slowing the podcast down, going for bigger guests, but just pausing in between and putting everything into build. How do we have, you and I, all of us watching this, the best breathwork community that there has ever been? If there was blue sky and anything was possible, what would that community look like? How would it be so freaking cool that you had to be part of it? And we could grow together as one rises, we all rise. That was pretty much everything I want to talk about. The last thing is I've started mouth taping during exercise. And even though that seems like a pretty obvious thing to do, I never really did it. I did it a little bit. I just keep a roll of Sellotape next to my gym equipment. And it's surprising, actually. I've tried it. I've tested it now. The times that I don't do it, I'll sneak in a couple of extra mouth breaths when I'm a bit out of breath. And what's going on here is by keeping it nasal, I'm keeping myself limited. because I can keep pushing myself, but I'll end up becoming out of breath. And I don't want to become out of breath. I want to just get to that uncomfortable point where I would like to rip off the mouth tape, but I choose not to. So I'm improving my CO2 tolerance. I'm not gassing myself out, and I'm able to go longer in the gym. So I feel like I've become a lot fitter recently. I'm lifting heavier. I'm working out harder. I'm not drinking during the workout. I'll have a bit of water before, but I put the mouth tape on and I just work out. I lift, I stretch, I do all these different things. And so if you haven't done that already, I would consider having a crack at that. It doesn't have to just be mouth tape for sleep. It is mouth tape for exercise as well. So let me know how you get on with that. It's a simple hack. I don't necessarily need nose strips. As you probably notice, I've got pretty big nostrils anyway. So I'm not really needing those. But something very, very powerful there. So I think I've covered everything. Let me know what you'd like in the next one of these rambling podcasts. I've got James Nestor's podcast number 3 coming out soon. That's a biggie. I have to say, I watched number 1 back and I was cringing at the questions I was asking. And then I saw number 2 back and that was even worse because I was cockier somehow. Number 1 had bad audio, bad camera. And I feel like I nailed it this time. I feel like... Because I first interviewed this guy, I had no freaking idea about breathing. I did some Wim Hof breathing. I really feel like I've grown through him over the last 3.5-4 years. And we went really deep and really geeky. I'd like to think I challenged him a little bit on some of the stuff that he does know a lot. So I'm not saying he didn't, but I'd like to feel like there was like a little bit of like, oh, what about this and what about that? And so I feel like it's probably one of my most valuable podcast yet. For those of you that are really into the breath work and want to go a bit deeper, some of you did submit questions for that as well, so thank you. So that's coming out soon as well. So the big takeaway from this is the community. What do you want? How could it be epic? What would you need for it to be freaking awesome? And would you be interested in doing it? So let me know that. As always with these podcasts, we finish with a breathing exercise. So I'm going to pop on something at the end, probably coherence breathing, because it's so sexy right now and everybody wants to do it. So we'll do a bit of coherence breathing together. So get comfy. If you haven't subscribed, please do so. If you've enjoyed this, let me know. If you've hated this, let me know. You prefer the guests. And I look forward to hopefully seeing some of you in this community, which is probably going to launch quite soon. I think in February. I think really soon we're going to move on this. It feels like the natural next step. So I'm really excited. Thank you for being part of this. Thank you for giving me your attention. I hope I've provided you value. Take your time with the CO2 baths. Let me know how you get on. Maybe send me a picture on Instagram or something. And if you are interested in Vivation, the link is down below as well. I'm really working slowly with that, so probably 1-2 clients a month at the moment. It's a 7-week program, 2 hours a week, and yeah, we can jump on Zoom and have a chinwag about that. But it's so wonderful breathing in through the strongest feeling, noticing the subtle changes, and enjoying the moment as much as possible. They're just 3 of the points to remember with Vivation. Okay, here is coherence. Cheers. Slowly, gently in through the nose. And slowly, gently letting go. Softly in through the nose. And softly out. Smoothly in through your nose and gently out through your nose. Softly in, softly out, slowly, gently in through the nose. And slowly, gently letting go. that's it, you're done. You're exactly where you need to be. So just be really kind with yourself now. Take a few moments to wiggle those fingers and toes as you bring yourself back into the day to day. If you've enjoyed this exercise, why not subscribe or share with a friend or a loved one? And if you're interested in taking your breath work to the next level, you can contact Mike Mayer directly and inquire about his one-on-one coaching packages. We'll see you soon. Breathe well, my friend.